Good evening. The council has just returned from closed session, and I will ask our city attorney if we have any reportable action.
There's no reportable action.
Thank you. We will now go on to our regular session. And as Councilmember Darris is having a little bit of technical challenges on his end, I'm going to ask Councilmember Funk to lead us in a pledge.
Please rise as you're able and join me in saluting our flag.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Here.
Councilmember Darris?
Here.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here. All present. Thank you. Well, if you are attending in person, welcome tonight. And for those of you that are watching or listening, we welcome you as well. If you would like to speak during public comment on any of the items that are on our agenda or community forum, you can call 805-538-2888. Nick, I think you need to mute your microphone. For those of you that don't know, we are back in chambers. You can probably tell that, and we are working it out. So thank you for your patience. It's good to be back, though. So if you would like to speak during either community forum or on any of the items this evening, you can do so if you're in the webinar by raising your hand, and you'll know how to do that. You've got the little icon at the bottom of the screen. If you are listening on KPRL or you're watching on TV, you can call in at 805-538-2888. And when you do call, please let us know which item you are wishing to speak on. Once again, that number is 805-538-2888. Can I ask for an approval of the agenda?
I'll so move.
I'll second.
We have a motion to approve the agenda by Councilmember Borbo, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom, and we will waive the reading in full of all ordinances that are appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the council votes. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am. Motion passes. Thank you. We have no presentations this evening, so we are on to our consent calendar. And the consent calendar contains items that are considered to be routine and non-controversial by city staff and can be voted in one motion unless there's a member of the public or a member of council wishing to pull an item. Is there any of my colleagues wishing to pull? Councilmember Darris?
Nothing on the agenda or the consent calendar, I'm sorry, but did you need to make a mention about closed session report, if any?
Because that's that I actually did. Thank you for that. I actually did it before we got going, so I did it a little early on because that's
how we typically
do it. No, good call. Thank you for catching that, though, just in case. So seeing none of my colleagues, I'm looking to the webinar and see if I see any hands raised, anyone that would like to pull an item on consent. I'm not seeing any. Luke, is there anyone on the phone? If you're on the phone, you can press *9. No, seeing nobody. I will ask for a motion on the consent calendar.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Borbo and a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Borbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am. Motion passes. Thank you. We are on to updates from our city manager, Ms. Rickard.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, hey, welcome back. We are in person, and as you said, we're going to have some technology issues. I failed to coordinate with Luke to get my PowerPoint for CM report up, so we're just going to go with, you get to look at me while I talk instead of the PowerPoint. So roads ribbon cuttings are this Friday. We have several road projects that have recently been completed, and we will be holding official ribbon cuttings with our council members at several of these locations on Friday afternoon. For the F-14, the 2021 pavement rehabilitation project has been completed. on Pismo Avenue, Marchant Way, San Rafael, San Guillermo, Allegra, La Paz, San Diego, Coromar, and another area. I guess there's Marchant Avenue and Marchant Way. We've also completed several of our non-F14 local transportation fund road improvement projects. And that includes the pavement rehabilitation on San Gabriel and San Marcos roads, and then the resurfacing on ECR from El Bordo to Santa Barbara Road. So lots of paving projects just complete. We're already kicking off an in-design road, getting ready to bid for our 2022 projects. It's great to see a lot of roads moving forward. Also, we received some great news today. So we just received notification of our Excellence Award for the city's 21-23 budget. We received this great excerpt from the commentary section from a reviewer. It says, "This is a beautifully put together budget. All the information is well explained and easy to find." So hooray for Team Atascadero. Hooray for Team Finance. And it really is Team Atascadero, because every department puts a lot of time and effort into that budget. But the lion's share is definitely done by the finance department. A lot of long hours and a lot of care go into that. So we appreciate that this award recognizes hard work of people throughout the city. I want to tell you about an upcoming event. We have the Spartan Obstacle Course Race and Trail Races. The Spartan Obstacle and Trail Races are being held this Saturday and Sunday, March 12th through 13th at nearby Santa Margarita Ranch. The weekend-long event includes very challenging obstacle course races on Saturday and ultra 50K, half marathon, and 10K races on Sunday. Each day will also include kids' races and obstacle courses for the kids, too. The ranch features our local rolling grassy hillsides, open pastures, and oakline canyons, and each race includes lots of constantly changing and sometimes very challenging terrain. Participants will also be dashing through rows of grapevines and will have great views of local wildlife and fossilized oyster beds. And visitors can attend to cheer on their favorite athlete and to enjoy the event, which will include lots of music and food along with local wines made from the grapes grown right on the course. So that lots more information about this event can be found online. It's exciting to have it here. I know that people from all over the world are planning to attend, and so it's great to have them here in Atascadero. We have another event on Saturday night, and it is Zoo Trivia Night. So are you a wise owl? Do you think you know a lot about animals? Come test your knowledge at the Charles Paddock Zoo on Saturday, March 12th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. This event is $30 for an individual ticket or $125 for a table of five. If an individual ticket is purchased, seating will be made available on a first-come, first-served basis, and there will be some great prizes for first and second place. This is a fundraiser for our zoo, so come out, support the zoo, have fun with your friends, testing your animal knowledge. It promises to be a great event. And speaking of great events, we have another one, At Her Table Street Festival. This new event will be hosted by Fossil Wine Bar and our downtown businesses on Sunday. So that's Sunday, March 13th from noon to 5 p.m. on Entrada Avenue, with great food, beverages, live music, vendors, and more. And last but not least, the 4th annual Central Coast Craft Beer Fest presented by the Central Coast Brewers Guild will be held on Saturday, March 26th. So not this upcoming Saturday, the 26th. From noon to 4 p.m. here at the Sunken Gardens. I'm bringing it up now because they do tend to sell out. So I am recommending people go online right now and buy their tickets. There'll be over 55 local craft breweries, wineries, seltzers, and cideries from all over California. There will be live entertainment, plenty of food trucks, and a great variety of street fair vendors and lawn games. And for more information about any of these events, as always, go to www.visitatascadero.com. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the council may have.
I have a question. Anyone here doing the 50K? Yeah, me neither. Okay. Any council questions? All right. Thank you very much. And again, congratulations from all of us to finance. That's not surprising because we do an excellent job on the budget. But again, a congratulations. Good job. Thank you for all that you do in making that budget. Really, it's accessible, right, where people can see it. It's easy to understand and trace things back. So fantastic. All right, we are on to community forum. Community forum is reserved for persons who are wishing to address the council on an agenda, on something that's not on the agenda this evening, but over which the council has jurisdiction. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and we do set aside a total of up to 30 minutes for community forum time. Anything brought up this evening will not become a topic of discussion. And here we go. And anyone wishing to speak, we ask that you would state your name for the record. And hello, Wendy Lewis.
Hi, everybody. It's Wendy Lewis with El Camino Homeless Organization, or ECHO. Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity. Just wanted to update the community. The city just shared some wonderful events, and I wanted to share a wonderful event that ECHO will be putting on in April, our Empty Bowls event, which is kind of our flagship fundraiser, will be happening on April 28th at our wonderful, generous host, ABC Church. It'll be a great community event. The community is always there for us, and we're so excited to be welcoming them back for the artist-made bowls, the delicious soups, and an opportunity to really support ECHO and the support we provide to people who are trying to get back into housing. We would love to thank our two really generous sponsors. We have a ton, but it'd be way past 3 minutes to list them all. So just wanted to mention Howard's Products. They're on board as our founding sponsor. And Specialty Construction, Inc., they are our presenting sponsor. So both are wonderful businesses in our community with giant hearts. So we just wanted to put that message out there. We're still in need of more sponsors. We are still in need of more delicious soup. I can tell you we have more bowls this year than we've ever had to select from because a lot of people had a lot of time to do art projects over the past year or so, being at home quite a bit. So again, Empty Bowls, April 28th. Anybody can find information on our website at echoshelter.org. And we can't wait to see the community come together, our celebrity servers, and just celebrate together and over the work that's being done and hopefully do great work going forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's see. I will look into the webinar. Anybody wishing to speak, if you go ahead and press that raise hand icon, or if you're on the phone, press *9. And then if there's anyone else here wishing to speak, I'm not seeing anyone. Not seeing anyone in the webinar. Luke, anyone on the phone? No. All right. We will go ahead and close community forum. And since we have no one else wishing to speak at this time, community forum will remain open until 6:42 p.m. And at this time, the council will move on to the next item. But if there is anyone wishing to speak, you can raise your hand on the webinar. You can come in here personally. You can be on the phone at 805-538-2888 in that time frame, and you will be recognized to speak at the earliest possible convenience, which will be at the end of whatever item we happen to be addressing. So thank you very much for your comments. We're now on to our public hearing, B1, the 2022 Community Development Block Grant Funding Recommendations. I will first ask my colleagues if we have any ex parte. I'll start from my right and go to my left.
I am regularly in communication with all of our homeless services providers, but we'll not talk specifically about these allocations.
After our initial allocation in whatever month that was, I did have a discussion with Wendy Lewis while at a chamber mixer. Okay.
I have also had conversations with Wendy Lewis from ECHO.
No ex parte.
Thank you. And
no ex parte.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Councilmember Darris. You're going to have to do that, right? Pipe in for me. Good. But I see you right there. That's good. All right, moving to our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeBar, for this item.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno, and good evening, City Council. So this item tonight is actually a continuation, not really a continuation, but the stage two or step two of our CDBG funding. Back in December 14th, we actually brought to Council applications that the county solicited and we reviewed those applications and council made draft recommendations. And during that time, the county, who administrates a lot of this for us, also received all the other cities and the counties' draft recommendations. But tonight we're looking at the final recommendations. So once those are determined by the council tonight, we'll forward those to this, the county for final allocations. Here's a table that summarizes the consensus that the city council had, which was, I think we went by average this year. Sometimes we do other ways. But you can see here the applications and then what was allocated. That first area, public facilities, that $90,652 was draft recommended to go to the city of Atascadero for the Santa Rosa sidewalk improvements. And then under public services, which are capped to 15% of the total that we get, which is $139,465. This is an estimate. Final numbers will be known here shortly. But the youth scholarships, $10,752. ECHO, $8,524. And then Five Cities Homeless Coalition, $1,644. Now, there is a minimum allocation of $8,000. That needs to be for any of these applications. But the other agencies have made up that difference for Five Cities Homeless Coalition. So that $1,644 will still go to them. But there's also, like almost $47,000 from the county, Paso Robles, Pismo Beach, AG, and Morro Bay. That also is going to the Five Cities Homeless mm-hmm. Coalition. And then lastly, the administration, again, capped to 20%, so you can see the breakdowns there. So, again, tonight we're looking at $139,465 to allocate. Final awards are usually proportionately shared amongst the applicants or the wards. So if, you know, we get an extra $1,000, that'll be prorated between those funding recommendations. So again, tonight, council review and approve the funding recommendations for the 2022 CDBG, and then authorize staff to adjust final awards proportionate to the receipt of the final funding amount. So that's kind of a tongue twister a little bit. Anyways, with that, I can take any questions.
Thank you, Director. Are we as a council, if we were to decide on any different allocations this evening, is that possible, or are we committed to the preliminary recommendations?
No, I think you can make changes if you like.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I can see everybody on the screen, so we can kind of do what we were doing with raising hands if we want, because I can see you on the screen. Councilmember Funk.
Okay. Question for staff. If the council chose to tonight, could we take to direct, other than a pro rata allocation of any additional monies, but designate the services to one particular organization and the any capital monies to the winning project?
I don't know that, but I think we probably could. We could make that direction to the county, and then they, when those come in, I believe that should be no problem.
Okay, I see the city manager nodding yes, so, okay.
Is there any possibility, though, that the number would come in lower and would have to come back to us for a decision? Because if an additional money comes in, what Councilmember Funk suggested makes sense, that we kind of decide that here and now, so it doesn't have to come back. But is there a chance that it would come back as less money available, and then we'd have to make a decision what got cut?
Yeah, there certainly is that possibility. I'm not sure if it's ever happened before, but it does exist.
Okay.
Our city manager is saying it has happened before.
Because I don't recall it happening in my 5 years, but...
You know, it's pretty close. Typically, it's within, you know, a couple thousand dollars.
In which case, it seems the prorating would go the opposite direction then.
Correct. So you can also do that if it comes in lower. You can also direct if you want something to be, you know, one of these awards to be less than what it is and the others remain whole.
Okay. Right. Any other council questions? All right. I see none at this time, so I'm going to go ahead and open this up to public comment. And I would love to hear from any members of the public wishing to speak on this item. You have 3 minutes, and please state your name for the record.
Good evening, Council. Jeff Oslin. Good to be back in chambers tonight. It's nice to see faces. In regards to the funding, I definitely agree with the allocation of funds if there's anything extra, and I would hope that we would allocate anything extra to ECHO. Also, if these funds are not all spent in a timely manner, I'd also like to see the funds directed to ECHO, because I know last year you had to shuffle some money, and I think that's an organization in our city that deserves it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oslin. Anyone else wishing to speak on this item? And I will also, we have one more person in the chambers, and anyone else on the webinar, if you're wishing to speak, you can raise your hand, and if you're on the phone, *9.
Good evening again. It's Wendy Lewis with El Camino Homeless Organization. I just want to put out there that I'm grateful for the ongoing support from the CDBG funding from the city. It's been, they're coming in well before my time at ECHO, and it just makes a really great impact to our work. So I'm grateful for whatever recommendations that you guys see as appropriate and thankful for the city's partnership.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. All right, I will look to... Let me get back to participants here. And I'm not seeing anyone with a hand raised. If there's anyone on right now that would like to speak, go ahead and raise your hand. If you're on the phone, press *9. I'm not seeing any raised hands. Luke, do we have anyone on the phone? No. Okay. We'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to council. Something that I had brought up last time, and all, and it may be that this is something that waits until next go around. But I would like to see us put more attention onto ECHO. I know that my colleagues had decided to put some of the funding towards Five Cities Homeless Coalition, who is, you know, undoubtedly a very deserving organization. When I looked at the applications, though, I saw that ECHO, while they serve throughout the county, North County to South County, they kept their applications at the county level and in North County. They didn't go to the South County cities. And I think it's because they are a North County organization, and we're taking care of our own, and, you know, and they take care of others who come to them, which certainly we do end up with South County residents served by ECHO. And so, you know, Five Cities being a South County, and then they've come and asked for from other cities, I feel like we're kind of piecing away what would go to our North County organization and giving to another organization because they've served people in Atascadero. But if everybody who serves someone in Atascadero comes for money, then we're kind of piecing it out. And so I would just like to put out there, whether it's this time or we look at it more seriously next time, that we really focus in on ECHO, because that's where they are, that's where we are, in really supporting our community in that way. And as all of you know, it's tough. We don't have a lot of money to go around. These CDBG funds come in, and there's more need than there is money. And so we try to do the best that we can with them. Just in my time on council, I don't know if I've seen this low of an amount go to ECHO. So that's just kind of there. They have my heart. So that's the argument that I'm going to put forth. But I will see if anyone else has questions or comments. Councilmember Funk?
Yes. As chairman of the Homeless Services Oversight Council, I work with all the organizations. ECHO is my home team, and that's where I do my volunteer work. But I'm also aware that the different organizations have different specialties in their service. So Five Cities has been a leading provider of the services in rapid rehousing and homeless prevention services that are geared at keeping people away from homelessness. So oftentimes there is a partnership between the two organizations, so that someone who has been through ECHO's program may need additional funding to get them out
get them out the door into their housing, or to not have to stay as long in that program. And those are some of our folks that are being assisted in joint support. And Wendy is, can correct me later if that's not happening as often as we think, but it does happen, and that's so we are. This is money that, while it works through five cities because of the particular nature of the program that some of our folks may need, we're still us taking care of our own.
No, and I understand that, and I'm saying that ECHO also takes care of folks that live in South County, so it's sort of a give and take, and I would like to think that we locally keep our money here and support, so even though some of our money is going to five city folks, which is just fine, because they're at ECHO and need those services, so I think, to me, it's complementary, and that's why I was hoping we could keep our money here, but I'm open to other opinions too. It looks like Councilmember Borbo has.
Actually, Mayor, if you don't mind, and if Wendy doesn't mind, I did have a question for her.
I can open public comment again. Absolutely.
Wendy, since this is an abbreviated report, we don't have the the applications and stuff in front of us. Can you refresh our memory as to what this particular funding, whether it's going for ECHO in general, or I believe it's going for some specific services that ECHO provides, is that correct?
It's actually going for operating, so keeping our shelter up and running, providing the hopefully 60 beds soon as COVID is starting to decrease. We've been at somewhat of a limited capacity because of COVID, and we're excited to get to a point to offer it to all 60 people here in Atascadero, so it really helps provide our complete wraparound services. We provide from shelter, case management, our food programs, our meal programs, our shower programs, those total services that the community receives. And Mayor is so correct that we do serve countywide, but the majority of the people we serve are North County residents, and that's kind of our main focus, but we do welcome someone if they need services and don't have an alternate place to go.
Right. Thank you, Wendy. Mayor, I think you made a very good point, which I think your point was that, five cities provide services here in Atascadero and in the North County, and Paso Robles also set aside CDBG money for them. I think your point was that ECHO doesn't go to Grover Beach or AG or, or Pismo and ask for money.
Exactly.
And so I think if I understood, you correctly in our conversation at the chamber mixer with Wendy, that was really that your concern is that, even though the services are provided by both entities in the North County and in the South County, that the concern is that, ECHO doesn't go poach money out of the South County. We should keep our support in the North County. And so I appreciate that logic and that rationale. However, we made this decision in January. I think it would be very awkward for us to go back on that decision as a body at this point in time. And I'm confident that somebody will donate a sufficient and equivalent amount of money to ECHO.
Someone just handed me a check, by the way.
So.
Not made out to me, let me be clear.
I think we can make it go whole.
Thank you. And I had opened up public comments, so if there's anyone else wishing to speak on this item, I want to check our phone webinar. Nobody here? All right, we'll go ahead and close public comment. Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
I, too, would like to see us get to using those beds at full capacity. We have a lot of homeless residents that are really needing some shelter. So I'm kind of with Charles. It's always so hard in January when we look at those analysis and do an allocation. I think some of us are going to step up and do some sponsorships and everything to get you back at your capacity where you need to be. So thank you for coming and speaking, and thank you for doing what you do. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And so, yes, so maybe this is something we can keep in mind for next year. And Councilmember Borbo, I agree at this late date to change that. But clearly they did get a significant amount from throughout the county. So that is good news. Let's see. I'm not seeing any other members of the council wishing to speak. I think we would like to, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think from our conversations, we would like to see if any excess funds do come in for that can go to that 15% it probably is spread between the 80 and the 15, but that we would put to the operational project that we've chosen for the city, any capital funds and any other funds would go to ECHO. Do we have agreement on that?
Yes, that would be my
yes. And then if there is a reduction, I would say if we just prorate that.
Prorated.
Yeah. I think we're good.
Agree.
All right. Can I get a motion?
So move.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Is that clear for our city clerk?
It is.
All right. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. All right. Now that I'm having to deal with paper, I haven't had to deal with paper in 2 years. It's all been on a screen. All right. Item B2. More on SB 1383, as if we haven't had enough of that. Do we have any ex parte on this item? I'll start right to my left. Any ex parte?
No.
Seeing none. No ex parte.
I don't know. I've had so many conversations about 1383, I can't remember. Okay.
Charles has had many, but probably nothing that's changed his mind about anything tonight. All right. And we will move on to our Deputy City Manager, Laura Christensen. You'd think we'd never met in person before, right? We're all like, what?
It's not the meeting in person, it's the hybrid. Okay. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to try sharing my screen. Well, we're just going to. Can't even see to fix it. Okay, we're just going to go like this.
Since you have some technical difficulty, if we could take a quick, 3-minute restroom break.
I love it.
Thank you. All right, so City Council is back from a brief break, and we are going on to our public hearing item number B2, which is more on SB 1383. We have no ex parte communication, and our Deputy City Manager, Laura Christensen, is ready to deliver this report.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. We met on February 22nd, I guess that was just our last meeting, and we discussed SB 1383 in length. At that meeting, I had mentioned that we would need to come back to do a second ordinance with amendments to Title 8, our building code, in order to include additional SB 1383 requirements. Just really quick, in case someone missed that meeting and they're joining us tonight, SB 1383 was passed in 2016. Its regulations and requirements, let me close this so it's not adopted by CalRecycle to help achieve methane reduction targets. Basically, it's a statewide effort to reduce emissions of methane gas. It requires cities, counties, special districts to adopt ordinances or enforceable measures to basically implement these requirements for the reduction of methane. We introduced on the 22nd a large-scale ordinance that addresses solid waste recycling and organics. With the consent calendar, you just adopted that ordinance, and that amended that basically changed our Title 6, Chapter 4. And then now what we're going to talk about tonight is our California Green Code and MWELO, which is the Model Water Efficiency and Landscape Ordinance from the state. Existing law already has required that we adopt and enforce these requirements. We've done so in our municipal code under Title 8 with Chapter 8, which adopts the Cal Green Building Code, and Chapter 10, which is the Water Efficient Landscape. We've, in essence, adopted those by reference. And what SB 1383 has said is that you have to adopt or have an enforceable mechanism for specific sections of it. So while we have adopted those and we do enforce those, and those are reviewed as part of our plan check and as part of our construction, they want to see that we have something in place that calls those sections out specifically. So what we're doing tonight is a draft ordinance that will add those sections that they want. They will add those specifically to our code. what it's going to do under Title 8, under Chapter 8, it's going to add Section 8.102, which are basically the CalGreen requirements, which impacts multifamily construction and new commercial and multifamily construction, basically saying that those constructions are required to provide readily accessible areas with adequate storage for the storage and collection of both recyclable and organic materials. So they'll have to comply with the city's three or more container program, which what we just adopted tonight in our Title 6, Chapter 4. And then there also requires commercial and demolition debris that they are also following regulations with regards to collection of that and diversion of any organic waste that winds up as part of construction and demolition debris, that's also diverted from the landfill. We already have that in place when new construction comes in or, you know, if remodels or whatnot are coming in, we already have that. They're already given worksheets and all of that. This is literally just putting what we already do into our municipal code, which is what the CalRecycle, which is what the SB 1383 requirements and what CalRecycle will be looking for on April 1st. And then in section, in Chapter 10, we'll be adding Section 10.103, which just pulls in that language that they want from the Model Water Efficiency and Landscape Ordinance, basically saying that water-efficient landscaping is required for new construction projects greater than 500 square feet or projects rehabilitating landscape where the landscape area is greater than 2,500 square feet. And then they have certain mulch and compost requirements for projects that meet those requirements. And that's what we're here tonight to introduce for first reading by title only, the draft ordinance that amends Title 8, Chapter 8, and Chapter 10 to implement the CalGreen requirements and establish the water-efficient landscape and irrigation requirements in compliance with SB 1383.
Thank you, Laura. And so what we're really hearing is, you know, a lot of this is something we've already put in place and a lot that's already been a practice and requirements, but we're being required to codify it now.
Yes, these specific sections need to be called out specifically.
Yep. All right, thank you. So looking to my colleagues, if we have any questions of staff on this item. Councilmember Funk.
Yeah, one question. How does this ordinance interact with our weed abatement efforts? And does it assist or conflict with them?
This does not conflict with our weed abatement ordinance. Obviously, the mulch and some of that stuff helps keep down the weeds, which does help, reduce your fire fuels. So in that sense, it will be good. The compost, the mulch is typically not extremely a high fire fuel, and so this is a good thing for that.
Thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Seeing none, I will go to public, open up public comment. If you're on the webinar, please press the raise hand button. And if you're on the phone, *9. And anyone in the chambers, please come to the podium. I'm not seeing anybody. Anyone on the phone, Luke? No. All right. We'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back for a motion.
Actually, I do have a question on this. You may not know the answer, Laura, but you know this essentially requires on new construction. It doesn't apply retroactively, but it requires apartments to essentially have room in their garbage enclosures now for a green waste thing, which in the past we've only required there be room for two dumpsters. But it also in terms of this requirement for a certain amount of compost and a certain amount of mulch, we don't have any idea what that's going to cost people doing, building things or installing landscaping, do we?
We don't. And like I said, this is not new requirements. These are already requirements that have existed as part of the Model water landscape. Mm-hmm. So this has been in effect and something that has already been as part of plan check and whatnot has already been going through. So this is not new law that we're implementing. This is just SB 1383 has asked us to specifically call it out and have an enforcement mechanism built into our ordinance instead of just simply using our ordinance where we have by going through our code enforcement process, having something called out.
Yeah. Thank you. And it's, you know, it's just a matter, again, of another state requirement imposing additional costs on our, you know, on people in our city who are trying to get things done. But, you know, for the public, this is not something, you know, the city council has thought of or wants to impose, but we're required to do so by state law. I'll make a motion for approval staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Funk, and our Deputy City Manager will read the title of the ordinance.
An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, amending Title 8, Chapters 8, Green Building Code, and 10, Water Efficient Landscape and Irrigation of the Atascadero Municipal Code, adding Sections 8-8.102, Cal Green Recycling Requirements, and 8-10.103, Water Efficient Landscape and Irrigation Requirements, requiring compliance with specific sections of the California Green Building Code and State Model Water Efficient Landscape Code, as required by Senate Bill 1383. Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We are on to the first of two management reports. This is our proposed sewer service rate increases, and this will be our Public Works Director, Mr. Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. Okay, a little background on this item. Wastewater rate study was completed back in 2019. This study looked at many, many components and financial and, you know, with our customers. But it analyzed wastewater services, the enterprise revenue and requirements, and also that rate structure with user classifications and those items. One of the things that it did do was determine what the actual cost is to provide the service to the residents, and the service is only really provided to almost about half the residents in town, so the others are on septic, as everyone's aware, and what impacts that has to the customer's bill. Three key factors really came out of that. It was the rising treatment and energy cost, which have only gone up exponentially since 2019, impacts of regulation and legislation, and then critical upgrades and replacement. The study recommended annual increases over a five-year period. The city actually has only raised rates four times since 1982 when we took that over, and it really stayed flat from 1994 to 2017, I believe. So this is the chart that we have showing the current and proposed monthly rates. This is the user classifications on the first column. So you can see in that first item, residential fixed charges, single family home. We have this ED equivalent dwelling unit, which I've explained a number of times, and I won't bore you again tonight with that, I promise. But it all equates back to like what a single family home would discharge into the sewer system. It's equivalent to 240 gallons per day. And current monthly rate is $34 per month. This is collected annually on the property taxes. So it's residents that are connected to the city sewer will see that on their property taxes twice a year, so half of that. So the proposed increase would be $40.46 a month. That increase equates to $6.46 a month, or approximately $77.50 a year. And by this item, pursuing this rate increase, it's estimated to generate about $650,000 per year. This is a comparison. It's a great table. You know, I love showing this table, and I hope I can continue to love showing this table. But it shows kind of that where our current rates are. We're at the bottom or among the lowest in the county with similar size municipalities and even much larger ones as well. But you can see the bottom is our current rates. And the proposed rate of $40.46 bumps up a little bit. One takeaway on this table is that these rates are current rates, so these do not reflect any proposed increases that any of these other agencies are pursuing. So I'm guessing most, if not all, are pursuing increases just due to the same battle that we're dealing with increased cost. So Prop 218 is an interesting bill, or actually it's a proposition. It was adopted by California voters in 1995, I believe, but it requires that certain procedures have to be gone through with property-related fees increases. And it's like a majority protest. So it's basically there needs to be a public comment period of 45 days. And then if a majority of the customers, so in this case, it's not the entire city, it's just those that are on our sewer system, they need to have 50% plus one to kind of shoot down this proposed increase. It's actually kind of quite a high bar, and in years past, we've only gotten a handful of protests. But it does require us to go through this procedure. The city did establish procedures. The city clerk actually was pretty instrumental in that. She has a pretty big hand in this process as well. But it was passed by a resolution for these, and we do go by that procedures that were adopted at that time. This is I know it's hard to read this, but this is a public notice that we've drafted to send out this year. It talks about these rates, the effect, you know, on a single-family home or, you know, apartment or a senior condo or anything like that, and explains how they can protest the increase. So this is a schedule, next steps. So tonight we're looking to have City Council direct staff to begin administering that Prop 218 process. And then before March 25th, we will have all these notices mailed out to every customer. And customers that are these are going to be going to the property owners because we do collect these fees on the property taxes. So if there's a tenant in a particular home or space, they will not get a notice. It will be the actual property owner that will receive it because the property owner is paying the bills for this. And so we're planning on getting that out by March 25th. And then on May 10th, we'll have the public hearing, so that's one of the item recommendations tonight is to set that public hearing for May 10th. And then once, if this does go through, we'll come back and have council adopt a resolution to levy the sewer services on the property taxes on June 14th. And then the new rates would become effective on July 1st. So and then we do have a county deadline of mid-July to get the our list of levies over to the county. So tonight, recommendations is to direct staff to administer the Proposition 218 majority protest process and send out notice of the proposed increases to all property owners connected to the municipal sanitary sewer system. And then also set a public hearing on May 10th, 2022 for the City Council's consideration of the proposed wastewater rate increases. And I know we've done this the last couple of years, so I think we're probably all old hands at this. But with that, I'll turn it over and answer any questions you have.
Yeah, we're all quite experienced at this now, aren't we? For those of you that have been playing along the last 4 years, this is year four of five of estimated increases. Basically, we had gone about a quarter of a century without increasing our rates, and I went through and did a study to look at what was going to be required to bring our wastewater treatment plant into the 21st century and to serve the residents on sewer, which is about 5,000 connections citywide. And in order to do that, we clearly needed to do some increases. But as a city, we said we don't want to take this increase and do it all in 1 year. That would be unpalatable and challenging for constituents. So we didn't want to do that. So what we've done is we phased it in over 5 years. And this is our fourth year where we're doing about a 19% increase. The good news, as Director DeBar showed, is that that still is at the very low end of what the average county rate is for wastewater rates, for sewer rates. So that's kind of where we are at the moment. We've gone through this, as we said, several years. We'll go through it a couple more times before we finish out this fiscal year. And so I will look to my council members to see if we have any questions of staff before going to the public. I'm seeing no council member questions. I have just one question. I know that in my conversations with actually a third district supervisor and the city manager, and I met with Congressman Panetta, and both mentioned a lot of grants available, particularly as it relates to water, things of that nature. So as we're looking at this big, you know, $52 million nut to crack, do we see some potential for grant money in the future to help offset some of these rising costs even more than they were rising 4 years ago?
I sure hope so. And a lot of the funding nowadays is really connected with disadvantaged communities. We've kind of experienced this, you know, going after transportation grants and other grant opportunities. But so much of that money is really disadvantaged communities. And we're really going to try. We'll try a lot. We're trying to get on the SRF, the State Revolving Fund, as well. So there's other opportunities to have like no or low interest rate loans from the state. That's also very impacted because we're not the only community trying to build and improve our treatment plant. But we will be coming back at a future time. We're currently in the middle of almost nearing the end of an alternative analysis for our treatment plant. So one of the things we need to do is we need to do secondary treatment improvements, and it's basically those big ponds out there aren't cutting, you know, the mustard anymore with treating the water we need to treat. The strength of the wastewater has really increased over the years, so we need a more effective treatment method. We also have new general permit discharge requirements that are going to be very difficult to meet without increasing doing some improvements out there. Plus, we want to, you know, have increased capacity as well.
Yeah. And so ultimately, it sounds like there is some grant funding. A lot of it is for disadvantaged communities for which we do not qualify, but there's, you know, possibly a small percentage, and we're pursuing where we can. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, and we are also working with Regional Water Quality Control Board. They do have some experts in obtaining funds for wastewater treatment plant upgrades, expansion of the wastewater treatment system, which we are also very interested in, and they are helping us, and we're working with them to see what funds are out there. We're very aggressively going after grants, I promise you.
Good. And I wanted our community to understand that we're always like turning over every rock that we can find to see what funding sources are available to help with projects like this. So thank you very much. All right, and with that, I will go ahead and open up this item to public comment and see if there's anyone in the chambers wishing to speak. I do see someone coming to the podium, and if there is anybody on the webinar who is wishing to speak, go ahead and raise your hand, and if you're on the phone, you can press star 9. Welcome.
Good evening, Council. Once again, Jeff Oslin, business owner and resident of Atascadero. I seem to recall when we did this about 5 years ago, I think the increase was about $200 per home over the five-year process, if I'm not mistaken. My question is that correct? And secondly, in a year when this five-year increase is up, are we going to be raising fees continually or taking a minor step back? What's the plan? Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone on the webinar wishing to speak? Luke, I'm going to rely on you because every time we switch screens, suddenly all the participants go away. So if you see any, can I do that or do you want me to go back to that screen? Okay. So if there's anyone with their hand raised or on the phone, if you could let me know. None. Okay. We'll go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to staff to answer that question. I heard you say your question and your two-part question was, were we looking at about $200 per year increase for over the 5 years? Okay. So you're asking if it's about $200 over the 5 years. I would say no, based upon like this increase is for an equivalent dwelling unit, which is what we would think of as a typical single family resident. This year is about a $6 increase. So times 12 would be 78 for this year. So depending upon if you're a single family resident, if you're in multifamily, if you're a commercial enterprise and how many equivalent dwelling units you are, it affects that. That calculation is affected. And it's about 19% each year. So, you know, Nick, if you, maybe our city manager wanted to.
Yeah, if you look on page 92 of the staff report, this was the original table that went to the council 5 years ago when we looked at it. We were going to take it from around $20 a month, which was $240 that we had had since 1992 to $48 a month by July of 2023. We are on that pace. So that is, you'll see that these numbers are very close to what we had in the staff report. As for future, I think Nick alluded to, it really is going to depend on Regional Water Quality Control Board, what it is going to take to meet those that new general permit, and what grants we get. We certainly don't want to raise rates. This was intended to get us caught up and then we'd be at a CPI increase. But with that change in that general permit, things have changed dramatically since then.
And that's it. We've shown that graph before, that if we had gone with a CPI increase over that quarter of a century every year, it would be about where we're trying to get to now. So actually, question, is that even within this 218 process, do you always have to have a study and go out and pay that, which of course is taxpayer dollars to pay that? Can you set in a CPI increase every year and do the 218 so that you don't get into this position? Or is that really not allowed with the way it's structured?
It is. You need the study as the base, and then you can do CPI, and then you need to do a study every once in a while just to verify that you're still within the realm. So that's certainly we'd like, once we get some of our big things out of the way, we'd like to get on that track.
Yep. All right. Yeah. Conversations for the future.
Yeah, and one of the things we want to do too is come back once that alternative analysis is done, maybe have some preliminary updated cost estimates, and then we can also we'll have our consultant here to explain the alternatives, and then also talk about some of the funding that we're pursuing. So that might really be a great item to discuss in the future, future.
I agree. I think we all do. All right, I'm seeing Councilmember Bourbeau.
Is there a time frame on when we expect that to come back, just in terms of your, you know, finalizing your discussions, or maybe not finalizing, but reaching in your discussions with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, a point at which you will come back? Because, I mean, they are notorious for turning, you know, $20 million projects into $50 million projects, and which goes to this entire point, which is, no, this rate increase schedule should set us right, unless they turn a, you know, $25 million project into a $50 or $60 million project. And depending on grant funding, we might have to
you know, do more rate increases. But when will that come back to us?
I would expect it in like 2 months, maybe.
Oh, really? Soon? Well. I thought you were going to say another year and a half.
Our city manager says no.
Yeah. Well, I think that alternative analysis would maybe be coming back in a few months.
Public
perhaps,
Works is optimistic.
But I think we won't really know what that's going to look like with the regional board for a while. But I think, you know, we're pretty well determine what those secondary improvements are, and with that are like the final disposal also. That's going to be a little trickier, and you know, that's how you, what we call, polish off the water. You know, what level do you treat it to? Do you disinfect it? Do you do reverse osmosis? You know, what do you do?
Brita filter, we just get out
exactly
there. Yeah.
and so we're going to be trying to wrap that up, but I think the negotiations with the water board are going to go on for a while. We had a great meeting with them last week. The city manager was on that meeting, and we're remaining optimistic.
That's encouraging. Hopefully. If we actually have had a great meeting with them, that is encouraging. Any other comments or questions from council? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion.
I'll move that we approve staff's recommendation. We approve the rate increase and direct them to administer the 218 process and set a public hearing date.
We have a motion by Councilmember Bourbeau and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We are on to Management Report C2, which is virtual meetings, AB 361 requirements. Okay. And this will be our Deputy City Manager, Laura Christensen. You and Nick are just ping-ponging tonight.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tonight we're going to talk about virtual meetings, the AB 361 requirements, which is what we're under right now for our virtual meeting. Teleconferencing is covered as part of the Brown Act. Typical teleconferencing rules for Brown Act meetings require that agendas are posted at all teleconference meeting locations, that each teleconference location is identified on the agenda, each teleconference location is publicly accessible, that a quorum of the council participate within city boundaries, and that the public provide opportunity to address the council directly at each one of those teleconference locations. With AB 361, this amended that section of the Brown Act with regards to teleconferencing. AB 361 became effective September 16, 2021, and really was a result of the shift that advisory bodies made with the COVID-19 pandemic and needing to meet virtually when they weren't allowed to meet in person. It adds Section E, and this will automatically repeal itself in January 1st, 2024. Basically, what it does is it creates alternative measures for virtual meetings. So it requires still, you still have to post an agenda like we do. You still have to, you know, follow typical Brown Act. But when it comes to teleconferencing, rather than what traditionally is required, where each teleconference location must be posted on the agenda, rather instead what you have to do is post how the public can access the meeting. So whether that be a call-in number or, you know, the link if you're using a virtual platform, and how that they can do that, and then that you continue to allow them to access the meeting publicly, so that you require, you know, that we still provide community forum, we still allow them to either call in or to use the public platform to speak to the council and participate in the meeting. It also makes changes like we have here with our 30-minute community forum. If we don't hit the 30-minute, then we leave that open until the 30 minutes has passed. So it still it allowed us to continue to meet virtually, but still protected the public's right to attend and participate in those meetings. With AB 361, what it said was you can continue to do this where the council has passed a resolution where they've where there's a declared state of emergency by the governor. So it has to be the governor has to have declared the state of emergency. The city council's made specific findings, and that they reconsider that resolution and those findings every 30 days. We've, as you can see, we've done that since it was passed in September, and we've come back every 30 days, and this is where we are now. It's time to come back on our 30 days. The required findings to continue using virtual meetings under AB 361 is that we reconsider the state of emergency as it exists, and that any of the circumstances exist, that the state of emergency continues directly impact the ability of members to meet safely in person, or that state or local officials continue to impose or recommend measures to promote social distancing. Our current circumstances, the state of emergency that the governor declared on March 4, 2020 is still in effect, and that there are social distancing measures that are currently in place right now. CDPH was the California Department of Public Health. They continue to strongly recommend masking indoors. Cal OSHA, the city's under Cal OSHA regulations. Cal OSHA regulations continue to require the city to provide education in terms of COVID-19, reminding people that it is an airborne disease. It's spread through airborne particles that, you know, when you're in close proximity can lead to exposure, and that the CDC still has quarantine and isolation recommendations for those who have either contracted COVID-19 or have been exposed to it. The recommendation that's before you is to adopt the draft resolution that makes the findings consistent with the requirements of AB 361, which will continue to allow for the conduct of virtual meetings, as we're doing tonight. If the resolution is not adopted, we do ask that council direct staff to conduct hybrid city council meetings so that public participation can still be virtual or in person. I did want to point out that passing the AB 361 resolution has to be passed by the city council, and then that's a trickle down to all the advisory bodies. So if the city council does not pass tonight's resolution, then our advisory bodies would need to return to in-person traditional meetings, as we don't have the staff or the staff to conduct the hybrid meetings like we're doing tonight. It would require to have a staff member available at all times, which right now is done by our IT manager for these ones, in order to do that, to provide the virtual technology necessary in order to do that. And we do have quite a few advisory bodies who continue to meet. We have our ATBID, our CSTOC, although they do only meet twice yearly. We have our ATBID, Planning Commission, we have DRC, mm-hmm. we have APU meetings that are done through community development where they continue to do those. They utilize that virtually. So without the adoption of the resolution, they would need to transition back to fully in person. If council does adopt the resolution, there's nothing that prohibits the city council from continuing to do something like tonight where we have a hybrid meeting, or for those advisory bodies to decide to go back to in person. It just allows this, because those conditions still exist, there are still the current circumstances, which then would allow to necessitate fully virtual meetings if we needed to. And with that, here is the recommendation, again, to adopt the draft resolution, making the findings consistent with the requirements of AB 361 to continue to allow for the conduct of virtual meetings, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So, Laura, it sounds like the real need for this, as you know, an emergency, if we look at it that way, there's still the emergency order in place, and if we're looking at that, we're saying, okay, if any member of either the elected or an appointed body, for instance, is exposed and then cannot be at a meeting physically because they've been exposed to COVID with, you know, somewhere outside of the city, that then they wouldn't be able to make the meeting virtually. Or we'd have to post all of those requirements, which is quite onerous on somebody who's, say, trying to conduct a meeting from his or her home. And so essentially that emergency is still in place because there are those quarantine requirements. And if one of the elected or appointed officials does become exposed, then that becomes an issue.
Yeah, I mean, and for your staff as well, if your staff is unavailable because of, you know, isolation, quarantine, if you have staff that is unable to attend in person, you know, for other reasons, maybe they're uncomfortable or they still need to wear a mask, and in dealing with that and, you know, trying to conduct a meeting in person while wearing a mask, that, you know, needs to be broadcast out. So there are still some of those requirements that are in place that, without having this, without making the AB 361 requirements, you'd have to go back to traditional in-person. And then if anyone was exposed or needing to isolate or quarantine, unless you know that 72 hours in advance and could put that on the agendas and then post at those locations and make those locations accessible. Although if someone's under quarantine and isolation, I don't think you would be able to make those accessible to the public.
Right. So, but my understanding is that the Brown Act really only applies to the body itself. So staff can still be virtual. Like, I'm just trying to be clear on this. Staff could be virtual whether or not we're under AB 361. Is that
so that would... Perhaps, I mean, if we were doing a hybrid meeting for city council, right. Yes, it would not work for your other advisory meetings because they can't operate a hybrid meeting.
They can't. Okay. So thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, we don't have the technology and the bodies available for all of those other meetings to be conducted in a hybrid. So they would have to return strictly to in person.
Got it. And that would be challenging.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Questions by any of my colleagues?
Yes.
Councilmember Borbo.
Yes. And along those lines, if I understood correctly, speaking to either you or the city manager earlier, your alternatives, though, if you don't pass the resolution, or let's say a few months down the road when more, guidance has changed or suggestions from the public health authorities or CDPH or CalOSHA or whatever have changed, and you really would become difficult to make these findings, whereas I don't think there's any difficulty in making them tonight. But as I understood correctly, for our advisory bodies, like Planning Commission, you could go, if you didn't have this resolution, you could go an all-virtual meeting or an all-in-person meeting?
No, only if the council passes an AB 361 resolution. So if council passes an AB 361 resolution, then planning, one of those advisory bodies could choose to be all virtual or all in person. They couldn't do a hybrid like we're
doing
tonight.
They couldn't do a hybrid, but they could do all Zoom.
Yes.
Only with AB
361. But only with AB 361.
Okay. Yes. Now, I thought you were saying that in the absence of AB 361, you could have an all Zoom meeting.
No.
Okay. No. They could do, I mean... Yes, we could go to a fully teleconference, but they'd have to do it based on traditional Brown Act requirements for teleconferencing.
Right.
Yes.
And you could have a situation where I'm a planning commissioner, I have COVID, I want to take the meeting from my house, but you have to post I'm going to be at my house and the public is welcome to join me.
Yep. Yeah, and you'd have to make that publicly accessible, though if you have COVID and are under isolation and quarantine, they don't.
Yes, gotcha. So in the absence of AB 361, essentially we're back to in-person meetings for all of our advisory bodies.
Yes.
Because we really just simply don't have the staff to pull off hybrid meetings for all of those bodies.
We don't, and I guess what I should also point out is in the absence of AB 361 for council and the advisory, you'd have to go back to traditional anyway. So while a council member an advisory body member in absence of AB 361 could appear virtually, you would still have to follow the traditional rules for posting for teleconference.
Right.
AB 361 is the only way that allows us to, you know, kind of... to not have to do that in order to protect.
Right. And in terms of the public participation, I think a lot of people have gotten used to being able, instead of having to sit here and wait an unknown amount of time for an agenda item to come up, they kind of like sitting at home and being able to,
you know, check in and then call in, et cetera. And if I understand at the council level, we're going to still be able to allow that in the absence of AB 361, but that would not be, we don't really have the technology to pull that off at the advisory body level either, do we?
We don't have the staffing, and then because they don't all meet in the council chambers, it would require, you know, technology setups in every location where they have meetings, which we don't have the staff to do.
Right. Got it. It's just kind of interesting to me because, you know, as a result of, of this, we've seen, I don't know if we'd call it an increase in public participation, but certainly ease of public participation, and the state, it seems to me, should recognize that and change some of these requirements and allow it to be easier.
So, my understanding is that there are a couple of bills right now in the legislature that are dealing with this. So I think we will see some changes probably even before AB 361 sunsets.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Councilmember Funk.
Yeah. And am I correct in understanding that in the absence of an AB 361 resolution, that if a member of either this council or one of the advisory bodies was exposed to disease or took ill and could not come into the meetings, that if that happened within 72 hours of the meeting, that they would simply be unable to participate?
Yeah. Yes, and if it was within 72 hours or prior to, you know, the agenda being posted, then we would have to amend the agenda to post whichever location that they would be teleconferencing from. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, seeing no other questions, I will open this up to public comment. If there's any member of the public here in person or anyone on the webinar wishing to speak, you can raise your hand, press star 9 if you're on the phone. Seeing nobody rushing. Anyone on the phone, Luke? Was that a yes? Oh, there we go. Okay. Yes. Ryan. Unmute yourself, and
there you go. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I don't a lot of the language I'm not following completely, but I do know that it's a lot easier for some of the older folks that have the wisdom and experience, and a lot of your working citizens to be able to make a meeting when they're rushing about when you have this option. So I appreciate a lot of this stuff, regardless of COVID's political side, that it's brought. I've been able to work from home part-time. And so just being able to jump into a meeting while in the middle of life is made attending these meetings online available to me, and I know a good example would be like the Christmas parade in SLO. A lot of shut-ins get to see that because it used to be televised, and now they don't do that anymore. So I appreciate that it's online, and that's my comment.
Thank you, Mr. Burmaster. And if there's anyone else on the webinar, go ahead and raise your hand with that icon or press star 9 on the phone. I am not seeing anyone. Luke, anyone on the phone? No, and no one here in person. So we'll go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to council. And Ryan, we agree. We've heard a lot of feedback from the public that it is easier to participate because whether it's just a challenge for you to get out or you're working, you've got kids, I think this has increased participation. Even if not active participation, there's more people watching the meetings and getting engaged with what's going on in the city. So I think all of our hope is that with whatever the future legislation coming about is and the technology that we have, we will be able to continue to accommodate this type of participation because it's important and I think it's really good for our community. And with that, I will look to my colleagues for a motion.
I'll move that we adopt staff resolution.
I will second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Newsom, a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Councilmember Darris?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you.
And Madam Mayor, while we're on this, could we also have an agreement to direct staff that regardless of the AB 361, that we would encourage staff to be allowed to participate remotely so that they can be productive in their work or their family lives or
absolutely. Whatever. I think we all agree on that for sure. Yes.
Okay. Thank
you. Yes. All right. And we are now on to council announcements and committee reports. And I'm going to start with Council Member Darris.
I have nothing. We'll keep it simple. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Newsom.
I'm going to say with COVID, I don't know what my schedule is going to be about 72 hours out. And I am not inviting anyone to my house for a meeting. Speaking of advisory meetings, Design Review Committee will be meeting this Thursday at 2 p.m. It will be held virtually. It'll be on the Del Rio Marketplace and looking at the plans and the layout for the Valley Fresh Grocery Center, as well as the additional development all around that area. So we've got the plans here and schematics are pretty exciting, so that'll be a fun-filled meeting on Thursday. I would ask city staff to provide us council committee members on city schools committee for an updated schedule for the remainder of the year. We haven't met in quite some time, and some of us haven't seen each other publicly for a while. It'd be nice to see how the schools are doing with all of their latest changes. Thank you.
That is a good idea. Council Member Bourbeau.
Yes, I'd like to thank Mayor Pro Tem Newsom for bringing that up. I've thought of that occasionally as a member of that committee as well, even mentioned it to Superintendent Butler, et cetera, about it. We just haven't gotten together about scheduling a meeting. The Integrated Waste Management Authority, IWMA, board will be meeting tomorrow. Two issues of note for the city. First is that the board will review the amendment to the Joint Powers Agreement. And if the board passes that amendment, it will be referred to the jurisdictions, including the city of Atascadero, for ratification or, you know, adoption, whatever you want to call it. So that is something. There's some changes in there that pretty much all of the cities were looking for, and then there's some additional changes and to accommodate some technical things. So that'll be an important issue. And the second thing is that the board will be looking at approving a rate increase on the IWMA hauler fee that was necessitated in order to comply with all the requirements of SB 1383. So.
Thank you. Councilmember Funk.
Tomorrow I have afternoon meeting with the Atascadero Basin Groundwater Sustainability Agency, where we will be reviewing the agency's annual report. Now, mind you, we just passed the plan and sent that off to the state, but part of the deal is that we do be doing annual reports, and so that obligation is coming up promptly. That meeting will be in person, but you can read the all report in its glory online. Then on Thursday, I will be with Mayor Pro Tem Newsom at the Design Review Committee. And then next Wednesday, the 13th or the 16th of March, the Homeless Services Oversight Council will be meeting. This should be a particularly interesting meeting because we're presenting some of the early findings from the steering committee working on a strategic plan to address homelessness countywide. And that will focus on the situation analysis, just understanding where we are. In terms of addressing homelessness and what implications that has for the planning that we need to do. We'll also be talking about the fact that because there, you know, spoiler alert, there's a really large gap between the number of people that we're able to house, you know, or shelter in any fashion whatsoever, including safe parking, and the number of people that are homeless on any given night. And so in order to address some of that gap, and try to move people into housing more quickly so that we can get people out of our creeks and parks and every place else that's not fit for human habitation. We are looking at a very rapid cycle implementation process and, in fact, are working very actively with county staff to do three levels of work simultaneously. So we're doing the strategic planning work and also the action planning that usually follows from the staff. And early win implementation, all of those simultaneously. This is a pace of action that is normally associated with, say, corporate takeovers or corporate turnaround efforts, whether your company is failing and you've got to move fast. And it's not a pace that people in public bodies are used to. But if we keep doing what we've been doing, we're going to get the results we've been getting. So that we will have a deep dive into some of those recommendations and where we are during that meeting next Wednesday. And anyone who wishes to participate is welcome to join us on that. Will continue to be, at the moment, we think it is going to be a virtual meeting, but we're actually waiting verdict from County Council on that. If that does have to be in person, it will be in San Luis Obispo at the Veterans Hall. And apologies for a longer than usual run, but that I did want members to be aware of what's going in this area that affects our community so deeply and also so many others. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. That prompted a question, maybe for staff, maybe for Councilmember Funk. The warming shelter, when does that season end? It's sometime in March, is it not?
The Echo had to close its the winter shelter early due to staffing problems during the Omicron variant hit, and they have not been able to reopen it, so it remains closed for the season.
Okay, thank you.
Which is really a hard thing. Mm-hmm. I know they did not want to have to be in that position. That our homeless agencies, not just Echo, are really stressed for staffing. And we saw that thinly in Omicron, but it also continues to be a challenge that the people who do the work of caring for the homeless are having trouble finding housing that they can afford in our community.
Thank you. We had our SLO advisory committee meeting, and just updating us on their SEDS process, which is Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. So a lot of industry engagement. The kind of key industries they're looking at are agritech, clean tech, renewable energy, aerospace, defense, precision manufacturing and technology. So they're conducting 4 economic impact analysis, and really this needs to be done in order to be able to get grant funding. And so a lot of kind of big picture things happening at that level. With RTA, good news, the bus maintenance facility is about 98% complete. Just a few punch list items. We're going to be having the grand opening celebration a week from Friday, ribbon cutting. And good news, similar to not quite as good as City Hall, being $10 million under budget with our city manager at the helm at the time, but about $1.5 million under budget with the bus maintenance facility. This is one of those projects that got going at the right time. And we got that TIFIA funding, which, you know, is probably a type of funding mechanism we might look for, that type of thing for the wastewater treatment plant like we were talking about. But some really good news there. Let's see. Fare box recovery continues to be waived through 2022-2023. So that's good news for us. But that fiscal year is coming up soon. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens after that. We're certainly not the only agency struggling with that. All right, on to any individual determinations. I have just one. I wanted to let you all know that the mayors, countywide mayors, have kind of gotten together, and a lot of residents are asking, you know, for ways to be able to make a statement in support of Ukraine and how can they help. And so as mayors, we're coming together, the 7 of us, and doing a joint resolution in support of Ukraine, just as mayors, not as the cities. But I wanted to let all of you know that. And I know that each community, there are a lot of organizations that are involved in helping. And so, you know, those of you that are interested, I think Rotary at a bigger level is doing things. And so, you know, I think it'll be very easy to find ways to support it for constituents, for residents, community members that are wishing to do that. And with that, ooh, can I do this? All right, meeting adjourned.
Well, eventually.